Hey there, podcast listeners. Exciting news. My new audiobook, The Short Book Formula, a financial professional's guide to writing a book in 6 weeks to attract ideal clients, is out now. And the best part, for a limited time, we're offering this audiobook to you for free. Hurry over to www.theshortbookformula.com and claim your copy now. And now, on to our show. Welcome to another episode of the Million Dollar Producer Show. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce our guest, Stephen Oliver, the author of the book, Extraordinary Marketing for Financial Advisors, and the host of the Financial Advisor Marketing Podcast. Stephen's depth of knowledge in the realm of marketing, combined with his passion for the financial sector, has set him apart as a key influencer and thought leader for financial advisors. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you. Good to be here. I'm excited to talk to you again.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed being on your podcast. I think it was a few weeks ago. Excited to have you on my podcast so my listeners can learn from your wisdom. And I'd love to start with, who are you? Who is Stephen Oliver? Give us a high-level overview of your background, anything that you think is important for our audience to know about you.
Let me give you the short backwards of how I ended up here. I went to Georgetown University, got a degree in economics, thinking I was on my way to Harvard or Wharton for an MBA and then on to Wall Street. In fact, I interviewed with all the big Wall Street firms in one thing or another, and then made the strange decision to move to Denver and open a chain of martial arts schools. The backstory was that was always my hobby, and I was thinking I was going to be a professional fighter at some point. Sooner or later, I figured out getting hit in the frontal lobes over again for what they were getting paid was a bad strategy. I came to Denver. I opened 5 schools in 18 months, 6 schools in 30 months, and ended up growing to 3,500 active students by the time I was 25 years old. Was always interested in finance and in that area. Went back and got an MBA. And then every time I turned around, I was getting either a financial advisor or a commercial real estate broker or a managing partner of a law firm asking me how it was I was doing what I was doing. I was on infomercials, 30-second spots, full-page ads in the newspaper, and so forth. And just ended up backwards back into this industry. The advisor, I sought out an advisor at the time, one that I think back to in horror now, but I had a big staff and I was seeking out an advisor to do deferred executive compensation for golden handcuffs to keep my top people. His name was Peter Harnish with Northwestern Mutual. Every time I talked to him, I went, are you doing this? Are you doing this? Have you thought about this? And he's a top 0.1% producer for them. I think he's number 60 lifetime production in the history of the company. And I was just amazed at how bad the marketing was within the industry and started working with him informally, started working with some other people informally, then formally, and then completely shifted gears to do for financial advisors what I was already doing with martial arts schools. I mean, that spans 40 years. That when I opened the schools, it was exactly 40 years ago today or yesterday. That's the short thumbnail version of a kind of a weird trajectory here.
Thank you for sharing that. So you've been, if I heard you correctly, you've been working with financial advisors in some capacity for around 40 years.
With financial advisors, 15 to 20 years.
You obviously have a wealth of experience from your own personal marketing and business to working specifically with financial advisors. Thank you for sending me a copy of your book, which I'm holding.
Oh, you're very welcome.
On the screen. This is quite comprehensive. I was just thumbing through it before the call. One of the things that stood out to me was that you have a testimonial by a gentleman named Dan Kennedy.
Yeah.
And for anyone that doesn't know Dan Kennedy, he's definitely someone you want to check out. He's my so-called marketing guru of choice. I've been learning from him through all his different training programs for probably close to a decade now. And so I'd just love to know a little bit more about what is your relationship with Dan Kennedy?
I fell into him backwards when I was doing coaching and consulting one thing or another with martial arts schools, when the internet revolution came on, which is hard to believe it's 20 years ago or so now. I wrote a book in 1999 on marketing your martial arts school via online sources. Back then, that's pre-Google. So it was AltaVista and Yahoo was a directory. And the only pay-per-click was what became was GoTo, which became Overture, which became Google's inspiration. I stumbled across Dan Kennedy because he was like the source of all the gurus that I was following on the internet side.
He's the guru of gurus.
That's right. And everybody, Frank Kern, was in the little group that we were in, Yannick Silver, Corey Rudel, who passed away, sadly, from a racing accident, and any number of others. But I ended up going to some of his seminars, becoming a part of his little mastermind group, what back then he called the Platinum Group. It ultimately ended up being the Titanium Group. And then a private client. So I'm actively a private client of Dan's. I've worked with Dan forever. With my coaching business, Lee Meltier is a part of that, who, for those who are on Insider, she's Dan's best friend, and she's also a personal development guru who works with our clients as well. So I've been in that loop with him for easily 24 years. I recently went and did a speaking gig for the new owners, which is Russell Brunson of his company, relaunching Magnetic Marketing in Boise.
No, I'm aware. It's interesting. I heard, I want to say a few years ago, that Dan was in hospice.
Oh yeah, bad.
And then from what I know, this is in my information's dated, but he recovered. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how he's doing today. So is he out and about healthy, or is he where he's at today?
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, the rumor mill was that he was dead. And understandably, he's diabetic and he was in really bad shape. He was in hospice, as you said, not expected to recover. Then amazingly enough, made a recovery. He still is blind enough that he can't drive. And has some ongoing health issues. But no, he's back working and he's doing coaching and does some copywriting projects and occasionally speaking, not a lot. Mm-hmm. He does some gigs for Russell Brunson and does some things on his own. He just had an event in Cleveland.
So the overarching theme that I think you and I can have a really good conversation about as it ties into your book or just to your experience more broadly is, I'm a student, and really from learning from Dan Kennedy, I would say the concept of authority marketing, as I believe you are as well. In your mind, what is authority marketing and why is it important?
It is obviously a big topic, right? And in your specialty is for a financial advisor putting together a book. I pull it all the way back to before I moved to Denver. I was living in the Library of Congress, and one of the books that I came across was a book called Positioning. I forget the full title, but The Power of Your Mind or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was all about companies positioning themselves as the market leader and how to describe that. And back then it was IBM launching the PC and Avis versus Hertz and examples like that. But all of the concepts are just as valid now as they were then. Is, you know, what I don't know if you read Tim Ferriss's book, 4-Hour Workweek, but in his book, he talks about the bald-headed guy in the red BMW and not wanting to be that guy. But I think of it with advisors is they're having this sameness contest. We talk about them behind the scenes disparagingly sometimes as they're all wearing a JCPenney suit sitting behind an oak desk, trying to be as bland and as common as possible. And part of the way that you build authority, in fact, when I launched the book, one of the faxes that I have from Dan, he was referencing his work with financial advisors. And he made a reference, which I talk about in the book, to the theme song of Weeds. Now, I had never watched the show and I had no idea what he was talking about. I had to go look it up. But if you look at the lyrics, what it is basically about ticky-tacky little houses. Everybody goes to the same college, comes out, are all the same. They all live in houses that are all the same. They all, kids go to the same school. They're all the same. There are niches that are bad. CPAs, what distinguishes them. But I don't think there's one that's as bad as financial advisors. And in part, it's probably fear of compliance. They've all kind of been beat down into feeling like they have to be the same. And of course, in big companies, Northwestern Mutual, et cetera, they all get slapped around with very little flexibility in some things. But part of what builds authority is being memorable, right? Yeah. Is if you think about attorneys that you remember, his name's going to slip my mind, but remember the guy on the OJ trial that had the suede jacket and the ponytail? And
yeah, so let's test that. So there's Johnny Cochran, and then there was the Kardashian dad. I forget, I can't think of his name, but those are the two that stand out. Then there was the prosecutor, I think her name was Marsha. And of course, you had Judge Ito. But I think to your point, is this is what, 28 years ago? And why long are these names stuck in my head?
Yeah, long time ago. What happens on building authority is, so many times, and you see the advertising that goes on in this niche and others is what's different about you, right? Is, are you the authority in your area, or are you just no worse than anybody else? That was another theme that stuck out to me years ago. I was a big Tom Hopkins fan long before I knew who Dan Kennedy was. Mm. And one of the things he said is most businesses are promoting themselves with the theme of we're no worse than anybody else. So that's what it is. And the idea of authority is to be the guru on the top of the mountain. No. And you mentioned Dan. Nobody's better than Dan. The only way to communicate with Dan is by fax, right? I still have an e-fax number because I communicate with fax by fax. And he's even annoyed with that. He wants everybody to who's communicating with him have a physical fax machine plugged into it.
I think at this point he's just messing with people.
I think so. Yeah. But legitimately, he doesn't have email. He doesn't spend any time online to speak of. But that inaccessibility is one of the things that makes him be able to charge whatever it is nowadays, $19,000 a day or something like that, and makes him really attractive for people to work with him. And as an advisor, there's a number of ways to accomplish that. One is what you're really good at is do your own book. Now, neither one of us would recommend an advisor go do something that's like that for their book. It's really as a marketing tool and a positioning 50 pages, 80 pages, 90 pages, something like that is fine. This actually came out of, we got together and did a marketing program. Mm-hmm. And my associate who works for me, Greg Moody, we rented a boardroom when we were in Annapolis doing mm-hmm. a thing at the Naval Academy anyway. And we did two full days, had a video mm-hmm. crew meet us there. And it was a marketing program that got transcribed. Then we handed it off, to a professional writer to clean up the transcripts. Then I didn't like anything the writer did, so I took another 3 months and rewrote everything. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
But, you know, from a purely marketing and positioning perspective, I wouldn't recommend somebody do something like that, right? And this is pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, and to be clear, for someone that's listening and not watching, you're referring to your book, which I have in my hand here, and it looks like it's 341 pages.
Yes.
So it's a Bible in reference. It's a place of source of wisdom that dives into many different topics, but it's not a light read per se.
That's exactly right. And in fact, as a marketing tool for me to use towards advisors, the backstory is it's going to become probably 10 books. So it's going to be chopped up, become short books that then in internet marketing terms are lead magnets, free PDF downloads, one thing or another. But from a build authority, one is a perception of inaccessibility. Two is to create a perception, at least, of you're in high demand, right? One of the things that Kennedy does, and he got it from Nino Quibain, but the whole idea of he publishes his calendar and it always looks like it's full. No. And if I can schedule an appointment, it's going to be 3 weeks from Tuesday or something like that. It's not, oh yeah, I'm completely free all day tomorrow, the next day, whenever, I book it. But so inaccessibility, that's the guru on the top of the mountain. And
just in very practical terms, so I totally agree, but just in very practical terms, what impact does that have? Why is that helpful?
There's another great book. I hate to always quote other people's stuff, but Influence, Science, and Practice by Robert Cialdini.
Yep, great book.
And one of the things that he points out is the key elements of influence. One of them is social proof.
Yeah.
And I ran martial arts schools. And the mistake that those guys make is they want a 15,000 square foot massive facility. And then what happens is no matter how successful they are, it always looks empty. I have had a mastermind group that I used to go with, a mentor. His name was Nick Okinas. We used to go to Fort Lauderdale down on Sunrise. Mm-hmm. And there's this little Italian place called Big Louie's. And we would go over there and it had maybe 10 tables. They were so busy. They had the hostess on the sidewalk and people waiting around in the parking lot to get in. What you assume Big Louie's must be really good.
Yeah.
Because it's always busy. On the other hand, recently I walked into a Chinese restaurant here. They must have had 100 tables. There was two people here. It's prime time. Nobody's here. It must be horrible. So part of that idea is the social proof that place is so busy. The guy is so busy. You must be the best, right? Yeah. And I think what advisors are afraid of is they're afraid of, I want somebody when they reach out to me to get hold of me immediately because, right? Mm-hmm. So they're carrying around their cell phone. Their clients are texting them. They're mm-hmm. calling them back immediately. They're instantly responsive by email. But if you train clients that you can schedule appointment and you're available mm-hmm. by appointment, and if you train prospects, like for me, when we have somebody new come in, I have Mindy or Bob. Mm-hmm. They screen people. Then I have Jeff and Greg. They talk to them first. And mm-hmm. so somebody's already gone through three or four layers before they ever get to me. If that's the case, I must be pretty important, right? Yep. Yep. And from my standpoint, instead of me talking to every Tom, Dick, and Harry, I'm only talking to the ones that look like they're a good fit or good, are really serious, have jumped through some hoops and are ready to do whatever the next step is going to be. And advisors really should replicate that. It shouldn't be that all of your clients are reaching out to you by email at any time of the day. It should be there's a process, there's somebody to go through. And that's, again, something that Tim Ferriss's book, I thought that was 75% silly. But 25% was just absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. He talked about on his email, it had an autoresponder. And he first put on there that I check email every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. But in the meantime, if you have a crisis, this person handles, this person handles, this person handles this. So he directed. I actually have an autoresponder on my email. You may have seen it. That has a little clip from Monty Python of I'm Not Dead Yet. And it says, I really don't read email. If you know who I am, text my assistant. We can schedule an appointment. Yep. And so even at that level, it's telling people, not only am I not going to get back to you within 12 seconds, this is not the way to get to me at all.
Yeah. And it's really, just in my own words, it's really setting expectations, not just to get new clients, but really the whole process of working with people. Yeah. I think what precedes is what follows. And so if I guess the paradox that I see out there is that ultimately the advisor wants to be in the position of trusted advisor, someone mm-hmm. whose advice is valued and people go to them for that advice because they value it. But if in the whole sales process, they are seen as salespeople in a negative way where they're chasing, they're pushy, they're too available and all these different things, even if they get the client, guess what? You now you've set those expectations going forward about how available you are and that your time really isn't that important. And so it just sets up this terrible dynamic. Whereas conversely, if you are able to communicate, whether it's directly or indirectly through just how you position yourself and how you act and behave, then from the get-go, the person sees your time as valuable. They know that they shouldn't waste it. And then that carries on throughout the rest of the relationship. I guess the question I have from there is that I heard you say that at least the perception, I'm guessing this is for you. And for me, it's generally true where I'm just really busy and it's designed intentionally, but it's also true that I don't have time to waste. And someone has my calendar, they can schedule, I screen as appropriate. For someone that's looking to gets it, says, hey, I'd love to be able to do that. That's mm-hmm. my dream. How do I go from where I am to being able to turn that into a reality? What's the high-level playbook? I know there's many different things that can be done, but what's, in your mind, the playbook to go from A to B?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And there's any number of pieces, obviously, but I think one of them is everything is scheduled by appointment, and you time block your time. And, of course, I think you were using Calendarly. I use OneSub. Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing. Everything is booked by appointment. And anytime you're booking an appointment, there's a start time and an end time, and people miss that point, right? Yep. I book myself in 20-minute increments or in, like, we booked 45 minutes here. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people miss that end point thing, right? Is if I know, like when I talk with Dan, if I've got 20 minutes, I'm going to get to the point, and I know when our stop time is, and I don't know how many conversations I've had with him, and he goes, I'm out of clock. I got to go, right? Okay.
In my case, and this is both for myself, just to remind me, but I have this little clock that I'm holding up on the screen. Yeah. And if it's a 15-minute call, I'll set to 15 minutes because I'll get absorbed in the conversation. But what happens is that 15 minutes, it starts going beep, 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 which does two things. It alerts me, okay, I need to manage this time. And secondly, it sends the signal, okay, time's up. We need to wrap this up or whatever. I find it invaluable myself interestingly, I was just had a conversation with a new soon-to-be client of mine. I'd never talked to her before, complete stranger. She's an advisor. She was on my email list and she scheduled with me. And I spoke to her, I want to say, just earlier this week. And the first thing out of her mouth was like, wow, I've been waiting. I've been so excited to have this call with you. And this was as soon as I could get on your schedule. Mm-hmm. So what does that say? Immediately, I'm like, okay, this is going the way that I've designed this to work.
You bet.
And then as part of that, that's kind of part of the educating in advance and letting your marketing, in my mind, do a lot of the work for you, is that she had already downloaded my audiobook. She had gone through it. She had taken a bunch of notes. And I could tell this just by the opening things that she was saying and the questions and her enthusiasm. So again, me without having ever known who this person was prior to that call, I have someone who's so excited to work with me. And in one call, we basically signed her up.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing because normally for me, that could be a one or two call process. It really just depends on, I need to determine how much they know about me. I think you have a few more layers in between. For me, I'm also the first layer, but I limit my time to 15 minutes for reasons. Mm-hmm. But mostly it's to say, okay, between now and our next call, this is the assignment, mm-hmm. which is to go read, listen to my book so that when we come back and talk, that we can have a productive conversation. So I put up those hoops if they haven't already gone through them. And by extension, that's the process I want for the advisors that I work with, right? Yeah. It's that your time's valuable, but you also have to have the mindset. Your behavior has to follow your intention. In other words, you can't just say, hey, I want people to value my time. Then your behavior demonstrates the opposite.
You
have to be willing to let opportunities go because you follow the process that you designed intentionally to create the outcome that you want.
Yeah. And let's unravel what you said a little bit and think of it in two different sides. On the sales perspective, nothing is more powerful than what's often referred to as takeaway selling or having a qualification process. In every business that I work with, I always tell them, think about you're the Harvard or West Point admissions officer, where when you're interviewing them, they're trying to prove to you that they're going to qualify rather than you're come across as pitching them. I did that when I went to Georgetown. I interviewed Harvard, Princeton, Georgetown, one thing or another. Went to Washington because I had a job there already. But when you're interviewing at highly selective universities, they're ticking the boxes, do you fit?
Yep.
Knowing, and when I went there, I remember I got a letter back of, hey, thank you for applying. And I transferred. So it was something like, we have 18,000 applicants for 40 transfer spots and good luck and best wishes. And you know, we'll see. I mean, that was basically the gist of it. So one part of it is that, are you making them qualify, jump through hoops and making it special to work with you rather than you're trying to talk them into working with you? That's the, has to be the perception. But the other thing that you said, and like in our case, maybe it's a cold lead that comes in, but they'll get a big package in the mail. You know, it's a shock and awe box and one thing or another. But then when we schedule the appointment, there's an assignment to watch a video and read materials and so forth before the first meeting. And then between the first and second meeting, there's another assignment. And when I'm on the phone with them, the first thing I'm going to ask is, did you go through this? Yep. Oh, no. Let's schedule a time after you've had a chance to do that, and I'll send them back to go do their homework assignment.
Yep. And just to interject for a second, it's amazing because everything you just said 100% aligned with. I refer to the interview process as, I use the analogy of American Idol. Are you the contestant or are you the judge? Right.
You bet.
So, same concept. And then, 100% going through the process. If there was a assumption or an assignment given to do something, and in my case, is to read the book, and they come and they don't, and they haven't done it. And that's the first question I ask. I'm like, great, this is not going to be a good use of our time. If you're interested, I'm happy to talk to you, but let's do this. And so 100% aligned with you.
Yeah. Plus, if we've set aside whether it's 15 minutes or 45 minutes, that's predicated on the fact that you have an existing base of knowledge coming in.
Yep.
And now we're looking to see if it's a good fit and whether you qualify to work with us or not. I can't chew up 42 out of 45 minutes or 29 out of 30 minutes explaining to you what you should already know by then. 100%. Right? And again, it's not being arrogant. It's not being standoffish, anything else. It's if somebody's just coming to you, just give me the bottom line. Okay, we may not be a good fit. because I want to know that. And by the way, as soon as you in any way, shape, or form reject people, that's when they want it most.
And just underscore, that's the takeaway.
Exactly. Yeah. If I'm begging you to buy from me, it's not very attractive. If I'm saying, I'm not sure you're a good fit, we need to go through this and go through this, and we'll decide if that's going to be a good fit. Now you're back to, again, American Idol or the Harvard admissions officer. Yep. We're back to which hoops are you going to jump through in order to get to that point?
As part of that, so I guess the question that comes up is that for an advisor, is how do I create, I want to do that, but I think on a practical level, many advisors don't have the demand on their calendar, their schedule, et cetera. So they don't feel comfortable doing that. It's easy to do that when you have a lot of demand and you can legitimately say, hey, I just got so much time. And then it's much more natural to do that. At least that's my experience. But for a lot of the clients that I work with or start working with, the challenge that they have is that they don't have enough demand. And so they, I think, have a scarcity mindset that if they do this, they're going to miss the one opportunity or the two opportunities or whatever the number is. So just from a lead generation marketing perspective, and going to where you want with this, what do you see working the best today for advisors to generate the demand that fills up their calendar potentially with qualified prospects?
Right. And there's any numbers of examples, but take the one word you use, scarcity mentality. Is selling hungry out of desperation is always going to be bad, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. To quote Dan Kennedy, it's a lot easier to do that when there's another bus coming. Prospects. To me, the reason why, and I go all the way back to the first martial arts school I did, is I figured out very early on, and I was good at marketing from day one only because I had time to prep and were studying with people who are actually masters of it back then. But the biggest reason to get good at marketing is so you only accept clients that are a good fit with you. Because if you think about it, whether it's 80-20 or 90-10, most of us build up a client roster of people who can fog a mirror, right? If their check will clear and they can fog a mirror, I'm going to take them. And then, you know, you and I both talk to advisors who they spend all their time whining about their clients. It's, you found them, you took them. You know, if you only want to work with entrepreneurs, or if you only want to work with doctors, or if you only want to work with people with 3 million and up, or people who are liquidating a business, whatever it is, go find the people you want to work with. No. First question I ask advisors is, if we went through your client roster, number one, take the 20% that you love working with, forget about the others. And what's the commonality with those people?
No.
Let's go find those people, right? No. Yeah, but I need a certain number of sales, or I need, wait a minute. No. Let's go get who you want.
No.
And forget about everybody else. And then who you want, they're going to be willing to jump through some hoops. The problem is, if I only have one or two prospects coming in every month and I'm barely paying the bills, that's when I'm going to just take whoever fogs the mirror.
No.
Right.
I find also there's short-term and long-term thinking. I find for the most part that most advisors are naturally salespeople, and they're not marketing people. By contrast, right. Not marketing people. So they are action takers when it comes to sales. I want to talk to people. I want to do all these things, which of course sets up a lot of these dynamics. Whereas my approach, of course, starting with a book, is okay, let's, before we go and implement stuff, we need to have the marketing collateral in place. And so in my case, I focus on a book, which then creates the messaging, which then creates the whole ability to have a funnel of sorts and create the authority and all these different things. But the pushback I'll get, if you will, is that most people want to jump into the lead generation, into the sales side, but it sets up this vicious cycle where now you're just repeating and doing the same thing because you haven't gotten really good at marketing and you haven't invested the time, resources, whatever, in the collateral that you need to be successful. As an example, I'm about to publish my next book. Of course, the reason that I wrote it, my motivation was that, okay, I have a service that I want to sell. So I have an end. And then I just work my way backwards to, okay, what's the stories and the framework and all these different things to take someone from I don't know anything to they go through that. And they're like, I need this. Where has this been all my life? And so I start with the marketing collateral. And then once the marketing collateral is in place, I say, okay, now I'm going to go and talk about it.
You bet.
Because I have that in place.
You bet. And using marketing terminology, that's the difference between chasing down cold leads or chasing down constant, never-ending referrals, especially if you've built a business of people that weren't a good fit to begin with. They all know other people like them, right? That's part of the fallacy of this business. What one of my favorite sales movies, it's a good example of all the stuff not to do, is the first Wolf of Wall Street movie, Boiler Room. In fact, I was at Stratton Oakmont years ago. We were actually in the Wolf of Wall Street movie, the first IPO that they showed was a friend of mine, Mark Glazier, Master Glazier Karate. And after they had done the IPO, we were looking at doing a merger and I was going to become CEO of the thing. Luckily, ordered all the documents from the FTC. This is pre-internet, and pretty quickly figured out it didn't smell right. But in the boiler room, it's everybody's doing cold calls and you're getting people on the phone and one thing or another. That's the opposite of positioning yourself as an authority, right? Somebody like Dan Kennedy or Jay Abraham or picture whoever it is, the last thing they're going to be doing is doing 100 cold dials a day, right? Now, as you said, you used internet marketing terminology, a lead magnet. So a book or a report or a white paper or a webinar or whatever it is, having that as the offer eliminates that. Is I can put out on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Google, on by direct mail, whatever, is here's a free offer. No obligation. If you're interested, here's the offer, or it's $9.97, it's $99.97, whatever it is. And here's the offer. And then once they respond, you know somebody who's warm. And then you can move them into the funnel to then talk to you, right? But it's a completely different dynamic of I'm begging all my clients for who their three friends are. Then I'm cold calling the clients of, you're a friend of Jim Jones and I thought you might need my service. The good thing is they're a friend of Jim Jones. The bad thing is your positioning on day one is horrible. So I think that's where people have to shift their mindset from the go hunt what you kill and just beat the phones and cold contacting to putting out bait to get people to raise their hand. Most advisors love to hate them, but it's something that Fisher does very well.
I want to shift gears slightly and talk about, so someone's listening to this concept, right? It's great. I think this is music to someone's ears. I know it's music to my ears. I love authority marketing. I love operating in a world where I've set up these systems and they work fantastically. I honestly can't remember a bad sales call I've had in, I want to say years, because it doesn't mean that everyone's a right fit, which just means that I don't talk to people who don't demonstrate that they're a good fit or it gets shut down very quickly. So I never chase someone. It's always attraction-based and moving forward based off of those conditions. So for someone listening to this and they're interested in learning more about your work and maybe more specifically how you help them achieve this situation, what should someone know about your services, your books, the material you have out there?
I'd love for them to pick up the book. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, one thing or another. But if they go to my website, advisorwealthmastery.com, we give away a free digital copy. And where we're at is mostly working with higher end advisors, working with them in a direct support mode, and then suggesting that they do a book, that they do reports, that they do webinars and so forth. And if they want to do that, recommending you or recommending people for the appropriate thing. But we work with them on strategies and tactics. And mostly, frankly, what most of them, as you said, are sales focused. Mm-hmm. But aren't marketing focused. Mm-hmm. And they almost always do too few things. That's why I put that Neiman of Wall Street up there is we talk about building the Parthenon. So the facade is a good example of let's build lots of different pillars of marketing to bring people in, not just do one thing.
Yeah. No, I think that's really smart. It's myself, my own business. I have multiple pillars of marketing that I do. I'm always evaluating what works, what doesn't work, but the things that work, I pour more energy, more resources into, and through a combination of strategies, I'm able to keep the calendar nicely filled. And so I think oftentimes there's this sense that there's one thing. If I'm on, do Facebook, or if I do seminars, if I do LinkedIn, or if I do this, it's ultimately you want a synergy of the things that work best. But it starts from the positioning, right? It doesn't matter what the tactic is, I think the precursor to that is that you want the positioning down so that anything you do is going to be that much more successful.
Yeah. And I might add to that too. I think most advisors misperceive how most sales processes go, right? They think I get in front of people, they set an appointment, they buy or they don't buy, right? Yeah. 10-3-1, 10-3-1, yeah. That old formula. I did a admittedly imperfect insert of a survey of my clients. We had about 40 of them on a Zoom call. And I said, how long were you following me before we started working together? One of the guys said 7 years. Another one said 9 years. A couple of them had been clients, left and came back. Yep. And there may have been one or two that said, I discovered you and I came on board. Yep. But you mentioned seminars. Every time I talk to an advisor, and I'm not sure there's an exception to this, I say, what's your primary marketing method? And a lot of them say dinner meetings or lunch meetings or webinars, whatever. First question is, do you follow up when they register or do you follow up when they show up? It's always when they show up. Mm-hmm. What do you do with everybody who didn't show up? Mm-hmm. Nothing. What do you do with everybody who showed up and didn't make an appointment? Mm-hmm. Nothing, right? And, you know, to me, especially online, a webinar, it's the registration that's important. Yep. I really don't even care if they showed up for the meeting. Mm-hmm. And you and I are both doing lots of things. We use LinkedIn a lot, both cold contacting and posting all that stuff. You and I both have a podcast, a YouTube channel. You can go through the list. I know a lot of advisors that I've worked with, they follow the podcast for a year and a half.
Yeah.
By the time I talked to them, they already felt like they knew me. Another coach that I work with, Dan Caprell. I followed his podcast for a year before I ever met with him. And I felt like I knew him. I knew his kid. I knew his dog, his wife, where he liked to vacation. He was a life fisherman. And part of and by the way, the dumbest conversation I've had recently was I was talking to an advisor. He was an MBA from Northwestern Mutual. Thought he was smart. And he said, I connect with people on LinkedIn. If they haven't met with me within 30 days, I ask him. 30 days? Some of them, it's going to be 3 years. Some of them is going to be 2 years. Some of it's they went on Christmas holidays and they're pissed off that their brother-in-law is doing something that they're not doing. Who knows what gets them? And a lot of people just feel like they have to understand, research, and know you better before they're going to actually meet. I don't like meeting with people on the phone. I don't like making appointments to go to their office. I'd rather research a lot. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, 100%. I call it the trust barrier, right? There's timing. Right. There's okay. This is on my radar. I'm not ready to act yet. I want to start gathering some resources, some options. But at the end of the day, it's what I call the trust barrier. It's not some slick message. I need to know enough about you and feel comfortable that you're the right fit. Now, depending on the motivation of the person, that can happen over the course of a day, a week, a month. Mm-hmm. But to your point, and there's statistics out there, but I think that the vast majority of people, when they enter your world as a lead, it's just on the radar. It's not pressing yet. And if you don't have systems in place to build that relationship over time with them in a way that doesn't require you calling them, but it's done through podcasts, books, et cetera. Again, going back to the person I mentioned earlier today or earlier in this call who scheduled with me on Tuesday, and she was so excited and it was a great call. I looked at the history of the emails. She had joined my list, I want to say, 6 months ago, right? Yeah. It wasn't just like one and done. It was a 6 month thing, but it's that patience and that long-term strategy and focus that creates these dynamics. And I think it's really just comes down to a mindset, right? It's if you're looking for I want to pounce as soon as someone shows interest, then you're going to be stuck in that chase, your time's not valuable dynamic for the most part. But if you're willing to look longer term and be more strategic, then you can create what I would describe as a very fabulous model of, I enjoy what I do. I'm not a salesperson, right? I guess I am, but I don't think of myself as a salesperson because I'm a marketing person. And by the time I talk to someone, it's just enjoyable for the most part.
You bet. You bet. Go all the way back to 1983, 1984, is I started realizing very early on, we were running full page ads and the TV guide in both major daily papers. So 850,000 distribution, more or less, you know, the Rocky Mountain News, Denver Post, and the Denver metro area back then. And I would have people who told me they had 7 hour ads torn out of the paper under the microphone in the refrigerator before they got around to it. Right. And you know, what's happened in the digital age is people don't like direct mail for whatever reason. But the nice thing about physical deliverables is that you put it under the magnet on the refrigerator, sits on the desk. The thing about books is I keep encountering people who say, I just sent them a PDF. Okay, fine. But they either take action now or they don't. I've had people's book as literally as a coaster on my desk for 7 months before I ever got around to talking to them, right? I've had people mail me 7 or 8 different things before I ever got to it. And I'd go, oh yeah, I was meant to talk to them. And I put it down. And what happens is text messages and emails only are good for today.
Yep.
Nobody, and I'm exaggerating, but I don't know. I probably printed this year 2 emails to hold on to it. And hell, I owe you a testimonial for your book. I have it right here. I have the PDF on my desktop and I forgot about it.
Yeah.
It's really good, but it got lost in the shuffle of 200 emails today.
100%.
And it's that type of thing. You just have to keep dripping on them and educating them and waiting patiently sometimes. But again, even back to that old tried and true formula, 10, 3, 1. What do you do with the other 9, right? Okay, so I had 10, I got 1. They're not no sales. They're just, I didn't get them yet. Yeah, so if I keep dropping emails on them once or twice a day, if I keep texting them periodically, if I keep mailing them stuff, and I play prospect for every advisor I can possibly do. There's exactly one guy that I come across, and they're in the Denver metro area, and I've never worked with them. Townsend is the name. But 2 or 3 times a month, I get mail from them. I get invitations for the golf event. I get invitations for the anniversary celebration picnic. I get invitations to a seminar or a different thing. And of all the people that I have opted in, including Fisher, by the way, opted in and followed up on, they're the only ones that know. And I wasn't playing prospect because I was needed an advisor. I was playing prospect because I like to see everybody's marketing. Yep. So they're wasting the money on me. But what's happening is they're closing probably 3 times more sales than most of these other guys are, because they know that once somebody's raised their hand, somebody's raised their hand's worth 100-fold more than just somebody on a cold list somewhere.
Yeah, 100%. So wrapping things up, this has been a fantastic conversation.
I've enjoyed it.
I definitely enjoy talking to experts such as yourself that have a lot of experience, because these are the topics I like to geek out about. So
you bet.
Hopefully this conversation has been beneficial to our listeners. And again, for someone who wants to reach out to you or just learn more about you, what's the best next step for them?
You just go to advisorwealthmastery.com. The phone number's there. You'll get my associate, or you can get a free copy of the book, or it'll take you over to Barnes & Noble, Amazon, if you prefer not to give us your contact information. Just go get it.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time today. I've enjoyed the conversation, and I'm glad that you were a guest on today's show.
Thank you, Paul. I very much enjoyed it.